Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin. And this week we're going to talk about different models of medical care and maybe some things about what's wrong with the healthcare system in the United States. My guest is Pamela Weibel. She's a medical doctor. She graduated in 1993 from, in Texas, in Galveston, University of Texas Medical School, and is in practice in Eugene. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning.
Okay, so you've also published this very funny, informative book called Pet Goats and Pap Smears, which is definitely a look at, you're not the typical medical doctor.
That's what people tell me.
Okay, well, one of my impressions from reading your book is that you practice in a, what I would say is an older style, a much more of a, probably the way maybe before the 20s, 1920s, doctors practiced.
Well, I would probably divide what I'm doing from what most of medicine is doing. There's two categories, two ways of looking at it. There's either relationship-driven practices or production-driven practices. And unfortunately, most people today might feel, you know, when they leave the doctor's office that they just got off an assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of refer to that as assembly line medicine, whereas many doctors are pretty unsatisfied with that, as are the patients. So they've gone off to develop these different models, and I would say I'm more invested in the relationship and the quality than the quantity and the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a totally different experience, and kind of like just going to the old-fashioned family doctor right down the street in your neighborhood.
Right. Okay. So when you went into practice, you hated it.
Yeah, I thought it was very demeaning to the doctors and the patients to force us into this kind of a treadmill medicine game. So I actually quit medicine and decided to maybe go back to waitressing or something.
Basic.
Well, you know, something where I could actually be a human being again. I mean, why would I go into a career that's so dehumanizing that I can't even be myself?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people feel that way.
Okay, then your next step was you held this, like, community meeting with a big whiteboard and asked people for what did they want out of a doctor.
Right. I just got this amazing idea that, wow, if I'm not happy and the patients aren't happy, why don't I just lead a town hall meeting and invite the citizens of Lane County, Oregon to design an ideal medical clinic? And so I held 9 town hall meetings and got 100 pages of written testimony, adopted 90%, and we were open 1 month later.
Okay, now, but we is like you.
Well, with the help of all the community donating mm-hmm. their time and volunteering their ideas, and
mm-hmm.
yes, but I'm the only doctor there.
Okay, now another thing that's really unique is that you don't have an army of staff.
No, I don't need an army to fight off my patients. I just want to be with them.
Okay, but you don't have a billing office, right?
No,
you don't have a nurse.
Billing online. It's very easy.
Right, and you don't have a nurse?
No. People just call me when they need anything. They just kind of, they have my cell phone and my landline, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so while the rest of the American Medical Association is hiding with unlisted phone numbers, right?
Right.
Right. So you're out there and you don't feel like you're abused by your patients.
No, because actually what happens in the world, and you might notice this, is that people rise to the level of expectation that you have. So if you set really clear boundaries, you attract a group of people that can follow
mm-hmm.
those. So if you have a functional medical clinic, you actually attract people who are looking to be functional and healthy. Whereas, you know, many medical clinics are a little bit dysfunctional and chaotic, and so you attract dysfunctional and chaotic patients. I mean, you can feel the vibe, the difference if you go into a big medical clinic. You know, there's the this feeling sometimes that people are really passive and uninspired. You know, it just feels that way when you walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, I'm basically having these authentic relationships with my patients, so they match me. You know, they match where I am. They mirror me.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful.
It's great. It's much more, I don't, it's much
healing.
More how my husband and I practice.
You know. Oh, uh-huh.
We're chiropractors, and we have a very low-key relationship practice.
Right.
And what's funny and very ironic to me is that chiropractors have always practiced in the mode that you're describing.
I know it's nothing that I, you know, would say I created. It's just the community input was pretty interesting. But, yeah, people have been practicing this low-overhead relationship-driven model for years.
Right, really forever. I mean, if you read stories of 1700s of midwives, you know, the midwives were the kind of, although they mostly went to your house.
Right.
In fact, they pretty much only did their health care at your house, whether it was setting a bone or stitching something up or delivering a baby or doing, you know, postnatal care. But there has been a real shift in chiropractic as well to move towards this mechanized model, which is the less time you spend with the patient, the better. And I don't know who they think it's better for. It's certainly not better for the patient. It's not better for the doctor to accumulate information.
Oh, I think it's better for all the intermediaries, the no value-added intermediaries who are making money off of healthcare.
So we're talking about insurance companies and
pharmaceutical companies, people that are selling all sorts of little devices and things, you know, the whole idea that the answer to your problems is something outside of yourself. So all these people outside of the physician and the patient are inserting themselves in to the mix and taking their cut.
Oh, man, is that true?
Yeah. Have you heard that term disintermediation?
No.
It's a chapter in the book, I think, in the 70s. You know, it's 101 stories. They're all pretty short, but it's like a three-paragraph chapter that describes disintermediation means removing the middleman. And that's pretty much the only thing I've done. That's what patients have requested, is that I remove all these no-value-added intermediaries. And it was so funny. There's actually a word for that.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And so, in the very first chapter, you talk about a really young guy with really high blood pressure. And, you know, most of the time when people come to doctors with high blood pressure, you know, they get medication to lower the blood pressure and that's it. And nobody ever talks about why do they have high blood pressure? And this case was so unique. What would you describe it?
Well, he was 25 years old and basically macrobiotic and a skinny little healthy guy who had blood pressure that was like 200 over 120. I mean, it was double what it should have been. And so obviously there was another reason for it, because he's a real mellow guy. He wasn't nervous. And he just has no other medical problems. And so, he didn't have insurance, but I convinced him, and he didn't trust Western medicine, but he did trust me, because he came to one of the town hall meetings and met me and really liked me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was willing to come in and get this checked out and discovered with me that he had a blockage by his renal artery. He had a narrowed artery leading to one of his kidneys. And so we went in and did a little surgical procedure, and he's back to normal with a normal lifespan. He could have died any moment of a stroke with that condition.
And so the blood vessel was dilated, and then...
It was basically kind of kinked and narrowed and kind of almost shut down.
Oh, but was the procedure to dilate it?
To open it, right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then his blood pressure immediately dropped to normal.
Yeah,
right?
Immediately went back to normal.
So if he had been managed in a typical medical environment, he would have just been given, you know, calcium channel blockers and diuretics and, right?
Yeah, then he had been seen at, like, the College Health Center, and that's how he was treated, basically, and another clinic, I think.
And, of course, those didn't drop his blood pressure.
No, and, of course, they were not aligned with his values as a macrobiotic hippie living in the woods. He doesn't really want to take medication, and so if you prescribe something that the patient doesn't really want and doesn't believe in, they're likely not to continue it.
I would say.
So.
Yeah.
So for multiple reasons, it's not going to work.
Yeah. So that was such a cool story, because so often, I mean, when people come in to me and they're on blood pressure medication or other medication, I ask them, why are you on this?
Right.
And frequently, they don't even know.
Yeah, most people have no idea why they're on the medications they're on. It's part of this kind of passive healthcare model where patients come and, you know, the old style of it's a patriarchal healthcare system where, you know, the doctor tells you to do something and you do it and don't ask questions. And certainly there's no time for questions now.
Oh, boy.
5-minute appointments.
Yeah. Now, oh, that's another thing. Let's talk about your appointment schedule is actually very much like mine. 30-minute
mm-hmm.
appointments.
Mm-hmm.
I frequently on a first visit will have an hour.
Yeah, 30 to 60 minutes. That's what I do. Unless they have strep throat or something pretty simple, then we just
right.
treat that easily.
Sure. And so you find that in that time you have plenty of time to find out everything you need to know, which may have maybe their relationships or their job or all the facets that you can't find out in 5 minutes.
Right, and because I'm being so authentic and vulnerable, they're willing to match me and actually tell me the truth. I've had several patients tell me that they've lied to previous physicians because they just didn't want to get, lectured about drinking too much alcohol, and they didn't want to, you know, really say how many puffs of their inhaler they're taking because they didn't want to get put on a protocol with inhaled steroids and all sorts of other things. And so, yeah, because patients have the time and willingness to be honest with me, mm-hmm. we actually have a great partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a marriage, you know. You think about the doctor could be the most important person in your life. I mean, they can write a prescription that can kill you or save you
mm-hmm.
in a matter of seconds.
That is so true.
Know? But most people pick their doctor just randomly out of a list given to them by their insurance company.
Right, or you know? they ask their friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think I want to delve into some of the other things you're doing, which is you've been exporting your idea to other doctors.
Oh, I like that term. Yes, exporting. Yes. Yeah, other doctors have contacted me, and I've taught them how to run these community town hall meetings, and they've been replicating it in their little town so that this model, this neighborhood clinic that doesn't turn anyone away, you know, this could be available in every neighborhood of the country. So most people don't know about this. They just think their only option is to be held hostage to a clinic that's maybe not totally in alignment with their values. And so it's nice to know that citizens can actually create the type of health care they want.
Well, let's say a group of citizens wanted to create it. They have to find a doctor that is willing to operate in that, you know, environment.
Yeah, it's really not that hard. Doctors are super miserable, you know. I think 75% feel overworked and exhausted, and 60% are depressed. And we actually have a really high physician suicide rate in this country. So the physicians are really looking for answers. And if a community approached their favorite doctor who's working in the wrong clinic, you know, doesn't uh-huh. seem very happy, and said, you know, wow, can we do this a different way? I think the physician would love to try something else.
Yeah, because the majority of doctors in the United States they're not in private practice anymore.
Now, only 13% of doctors are in solo practice now, and that used to be what everyone did, you know, back in the 1950s and such.
Right, right.
Before Medicare.
Right.
And, yeah. And so, yeah, it's they call it a dying breed, but actually not. It's coming back because people are not real happy living on an industrialized medical.
And we're not healthier for it.
No, and we are definitely not healthier for it.
Right. We are less healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. I want to talk more about how unhappy doctors are and what suicide rates are. And if you, listener, would like to ask Pamela a question, give us a call here, 503-325-0010. You're listening to Your Health. My guest is Pamela Weibel. She's a medical doctor in Eugene with an ideal medical practice. And we'll be right back.
Llévatela para el solar, negrona.
We're back. You are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with Dr. Pamela Weibel. She's a medical doctor in Eugene, who has a very unique in modern America style of practice. So let's continue on with you make a statement in the book that happy doctors don't work for insurance companies or go out of practice.
Yeah, I think that when doctors are able to practice in alignment with their values, meaning what they wrote on their medical school applications, they all had this ideal of what type of doctor they wanted to be, and if they can get back to that, they love their careers. And doctors are, you know, they can work until their 80s or 90s. It's not like pilots where you have to retire at 60. And that's what we should want is a happy healthcare,
right?
You know, workforce.
So you made a comment that a large percentage of doctors are depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have
60%,
any
most studies reflect about
60%
have been
Whoa.
Depressed in their careers.
So
and medical students too are, you know, depressed.
Well, they're being taught to live that grind.
Mhm. Mhm.
And what's the suicide rate among doctors?
Well, the sad part is we're not really tracking this correctly because a lot of it is just swept under the carpet, but it's estimated that we lose about a doctor a day to suicide in the United States. So that's the equivalent of 1 to 2 full medical school classes of students a year.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are they a particular age range? Are they in their 50s?
They're usually male and in their maybe 40s, 50s, older, you know, middle age
mm-hmm.
doctors who just, I guess they get to that point where they're so discouraged by a number of factors. You can't just blame it completely on the career. Of course, some of these people have depression and bipolar and other mental illness. But the point is this career is the way it's being taught and the way it's practiced now is very dehumanized, which does not add resilience to somebody who already suffers with mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it causes a kind of de-identification with the self. You know, you lose your heart and soul in the training and practice of medicine and mm-hmm. become like a robot. That's kind of the way they're training students. And this reductionist patriarchal model.
Okay, yeah. How many doctors are leaving practice and either working for, you know, whatever, insurance companies? Those are the person who say, your patient doesn't need any more care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of doctors, because they can't figure out how to practice with joy and connect with their patients, which, by the way, studies reveal that the greatest source of joy for a physician, 60% of physicians say it's the patient relationship.
Oh, my.
And 21% say it is the intellectual stimulation. So what we're doing is we're taking away two of the biggest joys that physicians have, which is the relationship with their patients, number one, and the intellectual satisfaction when you put them on these cookbook protocols and these robotic sort of one-size-fits-all, you know, mm-hmm. medical model. It's just not working for anyone. And so, yeah, they're looking for other, for basically an escape route, you know. Maybe they have to work for a pharmaceutical company or insurance company or, you know, go into waitressing or do something different, or retire, you know. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know the numbers exactly, mm-hmm. but, I mean, look at how many people are left in solo practice. You know,
nobody. Yeah, hardly
somewhere.
Anyone.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple. I think there are two in Astoria.
Uh-huh.
Two courageous guys.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Yeah, but they're not doing ideal medical care.
Well, they're probably trying to do their form of ideal medical care.
I
it's
suppose.
Just nice because people don't really know what ideal medical care is and mm-hmm. just to define it, it's defined by the patients themselves. You know, they should walk out and say, wow, that was an ideal medical visit, or that was amazing, or, you know, that sort of thing. It's not defined by the physician. It's
uh-huh.
not defined by experts or politicians. So
uh-huh.
this really puts the patient in the front seat, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm. So we had a caller who wanted to know how long you've been using this model.
For 8 years.
Okay. And has it evolved over time?
It has evolved in that many other doctors are doing this. I mean, I'm still practicing the same way that my patients have instructed me to practice, meaning, you know, they wrote my job description for me. And
they said, you will listen to me.
Yeah, I mean, they just told me what they want. And what was so funny on those 100 pages of written testimony, it's like, wow, that's exactly what I want, too. So
it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, what a perfect fit. And I think when most doctors put their patients in the driver's seat, they get to where they want to go sooner. And
interesting.
So,
all right. Yeah. Well, I recently got my Brighton Bush Hot Springs catalog, and on page 11, I open it up, and there you are, teaching a class, live your dream, revolutionize your medical practice. So actually, any medical provider in Oregon or anywhere actually could go to Brighton Bush in the end of April and learn what you do, right?
Right, and I have people coming from all over the world, Canada, Mexico, you know, Oregon, of course. If you're in Oregon, it would be a great opportunity because it's just down the road.
Right,
but
and a beautiful environment. I mean, how could it be wrong?
Yeah, and anyone can come who's in healthcare. I mean, nurse practitioners, massage therapists, anyone who wants to take their practice to that next level.
Mm-hmm.
Because really what I teach is what none of us learn in our training, whether you're a massage therapist or definitely a medical student physician, you do not learn business skills and you do not learn community organizing as part of your...
you think not?
Yeah, you definitely. Learn that in chiropractic school?
No.
Yeah, I'm just...
Neither one of those things. Nothing to do with business and nothing...
The gaps of knowledge that would be really useful for any kind of healthcare provider, because let's just face it, we're not providing healthcare in a vacuum. I mean, the child that you look at is a child of a family. The family that you're caring for is affected by the environment and the community. We really need to look at healthcare more broadly and encompass the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm teaching.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It is. Okay, so when you go, like... There are times when you're asked to give a speech and you go and you talk to a bunch of doctors, and I could imagine that a certain percent of the room would be sitting back with their arms crossed over their chest with this, like, crap in the mouth kind of a, what are you, you're crazy.
Well, actually, when I speak, about 90% of the people love what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
As far as physicians are concerned. There's mm-hmm. always the 10% kind of the people that want to kill you, flog you publicly.
and that's because they feel threatened by that you're bringing up a different model?
Right. It's a complete paradigm shift. It's like telling somebody their religion is wrong. I mean, it's never going to go over well.
No, never.
And so the thing is, but you have to look at Schopenhauer's stages of acceptance. And by the way, there is this middle 10, but there's a 10% that, like, basically want to kill me, and then a 10% that are just skeptical, you know, highly skeptical, and then 80% are like, rah, 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 you know, cheerleaders ready to do the same thing.
Except that are 80% jumping out of their, you know, their, whatever, their kill 'em clinic and going in?
Yeah, not all of them are making the move, because really it takes a level of competence, and you got to build up to it for some people. Some people are really not that great at running their own practice, you know, they're not
right.
business people. And
they don't have a clue.
It takes a little while to work up to it. But it's kind of cool, because people eventually do. A woman who attended one of my keynotes in 2007 eventually came to the Brighton Bush retreat like last January and now has her own practice in Texas. But it took her 6 years of thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But the Schopenhauer stages of acceptance, the first one is ridicule, and the second is violent opposition, and the third is acceptance. So I just keep that in mind when people have these really intense reactions.
Mm-hmm. To me, it's the only way that it makes any sense to me to be in practice.
Right.
Anything else is a waste of time.
Right.
Because the relationship is that is what healthcare is.
Yeah, and that's where healing takes place.
Right.
In the relationship.
You know, one of the things that I loved is you talked about sometimes what people needed to hear from you was you need a different relationship, you need a different job, or, you know, that it had nothing to do with you need a test, you need a surgery, you know, you need a drug, you need a new job.
Yeah, I write prescriptions for quit your job, find a girlfriend, have great sex 3 times a week, you know, or more. It's refillable. And the thing is... my job is to look at the person not as a little machine, you know, going through an auto manufacturing plant, but my job is to look at their body and their mind, their spirit, you know, everything as one. And I actually am constantly thinking, well, what's the root of their problem? I know these are the words they're telling me, but what's behind it? Why,
mm-hmm.
why,
mm-hmm.
why? And I'm constantly asking that. And so when I come up with these prescriptions, they're really the solutions, the basic solutions to their multiple problems, which
mm-hmm.
is often not a pill.
No, it's often not. It's interesting because I will frequently say, you know, it doesn't look to me like your relationship is working. And then they have to deal with, once they hear that, how do I make that change?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, changing a career.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait, I have this student loan, or I'm invested in this, whatever it is, this relationship, in this family, in this job.
Right.
It's not always easy, but if they have support, they can start thinking about it.
Right. You're planting the seed. Some people take it and run, and other people have to cogitate for a few years.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I've just planted a seed. This one woman, you know, it looked to me like she was allergic to gluten, and I just said, why don't you just try that? And I saw her one time, and I saw her 3 months later. She ran up to me, and she said, thank you for saving my life. I've lost 45 pounds. I'm a totally different person. All my other health problems went away.
Wow.
And I one thing. It was great.
Hmm.
And I didn't know if she'd even do it, if she thought I was crazy or stupid or...
But so the key word is, why don't you try?
Right.
You know, because people love that you're just giving them an idea. You're not, like, dictating.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you spend a lot more time just having a conversation instead of dictating.
Right, because that's what people asked me for when they described their ideal doctor. They said it would be like visiting their friend who happens to be their doctor, you
uh-huh.
know, like in a living room setting, and not with the scary instruments staring at you and
uh-huh.
all that. Yeah, so the office is just a small, sweet, cozy, you know, little clinic in a... it's in a wellness center in Eugene, so we've got massage down the hall, and the space is really comfortable. You know, we sit on couches and fluffy pillows and, you know, the exam rooms around the back if we need to do the exams. So it's like sitting in a living room with your best friend and having tea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have tea?
There's tea upstairs in the yoga area, and then sometimes I bring snacks and drinks for them. So, yeah.
Wow. That's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that. I think I want to add that.
Well, I've done like chocolate-covered strawberries. You know, sometimes I make things for them, you know, that
mm-hmm.
I bring in trays of.
Okay,
cookies.
Now I've never heard of a doctor making food for their patients.
Yeah.
I like that.
I've done all sorts of things.
That is great. And you said something about, right, you said chocolate-covered strawberries, but also some chocolates? There was something in the book about chocolates.
Oh, right. Just, I have a gift basket at the door, and so people can, if I'm running late or if it's their birthday or something, you know, they can come in and pick a gift out of the gift basket, and there's soap and lotions and chocolates and all sorts of things in there.
Are they wrapped, or so it's a surprise,
yeah.
or they know what they're...
No, they know what it is. They uh-huh. they see what they're getting.
Okay, that sounds great.
But wrapped could be fun, too, but, you know, I do have, like, these little safe sex things, and that's not appropriate for like a little kid. Sometimes little kids will pull those out going, oh wow, and I'm like, no, pick the lip balm and
right,
get a
right.
bar of soap.
right so you have condoms in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, we went to a fair when one of my kids was really young, and she took a bunch of condoms and thought they were balloons, and took them home and put water in them, and we tied them, and we had a great time. And we didn't tell her what they were for.
Yeah, so who knows? Yeah, it doesn't matter.
She knows now.
Fun.
Yeah, she knows.
She should have taken a video of that. That would be fun to show at her wedding.
Really? Yeah. Well, in our last minute, do you have any... I don't know. Any words of wisdom for us?
Yeah, I just would like to encourage other people to break out of the medical mold. If you're not happy with the health care you're getting, you can receive ideal medical care. If you're a doctor and you're not happy with your employer, or you're not happy with your clinic or the health care you're providing, you can do it a different way. And so anyone can contact me. I'll email you back through idealmedicalcare.org. And if you want to check out the book, it's petgoatsandpapsmears.com. So I'm happy to help anyone along the way.
That's great. Well, and the book is a very fun read. I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for writing it.
Oh, it was a labor of love.
Great. Well, I'd love to check in a year or two and see how it's all going and what's happening. And maybe there'll be some changes in Astoria or in the Lower Columbia region regarding medical care. It'll be interesting to see if something happens from this conversation.
Yeah, it'll be great. Thank you for promoting this.
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
My guest has been Pamela Weibel. She's a medical doctor in practice in Eugene. And you can contact her through her website, idealmedicalcare.org.
I'm Ann Goldine.